It's our third birthday.
Happy birthday, us. We'll be celebrating in a bumper birthday video coming soon, and we want to answer your questions.
So if you've ever wondered what our favourite facts are, or how we choose what events to cover, or why we got the giggles in a particular episode, now is your opportunity to ask.
Email us now at theretrospectors@gmail.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's April 10th, 1633, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
We know from the diary of London apothecary Thomas Johnson that it was precisely today in history in 1633 that he received an unusual gift from his friend, Dr. John Argent, president of the Royal College of Physicians, to hang in the window of his shop, namely, quote, a plant he received from the Bermudas. His customers, who saw it in the window over the following weeks, weren't sure what to make of it. Some have judged it the forbidden fruit, he wrote, others the grapes brought to Moses out of the Holy Land, but they were all wrong, because this was the first bunch of bananas ever sold in London.
Yeah, the event was actually documented in Thomas Johnson's expanded edition of John Gerard's widely read botanical encyclopedia, The Herbal or General History of Plants. And it's believed that these bananas came from Bermuda, as you said, Rebecca, but we'd probably refer to them today as plantains. But in the record that Johnson offers, the lyrical quality of his prose is really excellently demonstrated, because he said, each of the fruits was not ripe, being green, each of them the bigness of a large bean, some 5 inches long and 1.5 inches in breadth. The stalk is short and like one's little finger. They hang with their heads down, but if you turn them up, they look somewhat like a boat. Their husk is easily removed. The pulp is white, soft and tender, and ate somewhat like a muskmelon. So it just sort of rams home the fact that this is a fruit that nobody in England was familiar with at this time.
Yes, and as Rebecca alluded to, if ever they did see, they immediately perceived as being somewhat obscene. Purely because of its shape. It was considered in polite society that ladies in particular should not be seen alone with a banana.
Don't eat banana without a chaperone.
And when eventually bananas did become a mass-produced product, we'll get to that, one of the obstacles that had to be overcome was this kind of public distrust of the banana as something that could be eaten in polite society. And genuinely, there were poster campaigns showing well-to-do ladies with bananas to show that you could superimpose the obscene-looking fruit with a genteel lady and the world would not end. But for a long time, if they were served at all, they were sliced and served in a bowl like fruit salad. But anyway, yes, as you say, plantains rather than bananas as we know them now at this stage, because the banana that is now the banana we all know and love is basically the Cavendish banana. The Cavendish banana only became top banana because there was a virulent fungal pathogen which wiped out the previous variety that was ubiquitous around the world, the Gros Michel.
Yeah, nicknamed Big Mike. It was subjected to basically the dinosaur-killing asteroid of bananas, this devastating disease known as Panama disease. It was very susceptible to this blight in particular compared to other cultivars of banana. But because Gros Michel had become the dominant variety, you know, the bananas on Carmen Miranda's fruit hat in the 1940s were almost certainly Gros Michels.
Oh, celebrity bananas.
Yes, exactly. But their susceptibility to Panama disease was very much a weakness. And there had been outbreaks before. The 1923 novelty earworm, Yes, We Have No Bananas, was apparently inspired by an outbreak of Panama disease, which caused a shortage. But in this particular one in the 1950s, it spread through banana plantations across Central America, totally devastating them. By 1960, the Cavendish, which previously was a niche variety, had emerged as the banana of the future, and it was developed not in a tropical paradise, but in the greenhouse at Chatsworth House in Derbyshire in 1836 by the head gardener, Joseph Paxton. He named the cultivar after his employers, the Cavendish family. And he also, not only did did he invent the banana that we all eat today. He became such an expert at constructing greenhouses at Chatsworth House, he ended up designing the Crystal Palace for the Great Exhibition of 1851.
Can we just pause on that fact before we go any further and just linger on it for a second and let it swirl around in your brain? Because bananas are seen as still like the definition of tropical fruit for a lot of people, like the exotic thing that only comes from South America and the Caribbean, right? But the Cavendish was developed in a greenhouse in England.
And this also explains why banana flavouring, think foam bananas or, you know, banana milkshake, doesn't really taste very banana-y when you think about it, because banana flavouring was developed before the emergence of the Cavendish using a chemical profile that approximated the taste of the Gros Michel.
Oh my God! So the sweet tastes like an old banana you can't buy anymore, like the dinosaur of bananas.
If you actually, just because it's labelled banana, you think it tastes like banana, yeah. But next time you eat something banana flavoured, think about it and you'll realise that it doesn't really taste super banana-y.
Man, I would have hated old style bananas in that case because that banana flavour is gross. You know, bananas are actually believed to have originated up to 10,000 years ago, and some scientists believe they may have been the world's first fruit. The first bananas are thought to have grown in the region that includes the Malaya Peninsula, Indonesia, the Philippines and New Guinea. And from here, traders and travellers took them to India, Africa and Polynesia. There were references to bananas in 600 BC in Buddhist scriptures, and then they sort of spread to the Western world via Alexander the Great. And when his army invaded India, he discovered banana crops in the Indian valleys. And after tasting the unusual fruit for the first time, he then sort of brought it back with him and was like, here you go. This is a thing that will one day sort of appear in a chemical profile that everyone will despise. That was how it kind of got to us. By AD 200, it had spread over to China. But it's worth noting that the bananas that we enjoy today are far better than the original wild fruit, which contained huge, hard seeds and not very much of the tasty pulp that we expect from bananas today.
Yeah. And interestingly, this bunch that was hanging in Thomas Johnson's window in 1633, they were definitely not the first bananas ever to arrive in Britain. We know this because in 1999, an archaeological dig at a 15th century fish farm along the Thames unearthed a banana skin that was later dated to about 1460. This was around the time of the first European voyages to West Africa, and it's thought the banana was probably brought back from one of these as a novelty. But crucially, this was something that somebody had just picked up on a visit to an exotic foreign land and brought back as a little memento. It certainly wasn't any attempt to try and export bananas or popularise them. And so these were probably the first bananas that were sold, although we don't know that they were actually sold or whether they were just hung up as a display. And indeed, if anyone had purchased one on this date, they would have been disappointed because Johnson noted in his diary that they didn't ripen until the start of May, so several weeks from this day.
I mean, there's really one man who's responsible for taking this fruit that people knew about but hadn't necessarily seen or tasted and turning it into the world's most popular fruit, and that is Minor Cooper Keith, who was an American entrepreneur who headed to Costa Rica to seek his riches. This is hundreds of years later. This is 1872. He didn't go there to plant bananas. He went there to build a railroad through the rainforest. And that was such a mad thing to do that the Costa Rican government actually allowed him to and gave him money and subsidized him because they were like, yeah, sure, if you want to try and build a railroad through that, go for it. Loads of people died building the railroad. The government were on the brink of going bust. He then borrowed just over £1 million from England to finish the project, in return for which Costa Rica gave him control of the land that the railroad crossed, which meant he then had 800,000 acres of tax-free land, and bananas are easy to grow. So he put them there thinking, well, I'll feed my workers on these, and then suddenly realised, oh, I can pivot to having a farming business for bananas that then ships the bananas to the port that we're building with the government money on my railroad, own every single part of the supply chain, ship the banana when it's green, get it on the shelf of a US grocery store 7 days later, which is remarkable. He had the world's first refrigerated ships. And therefore create this global demand.
He'd created the United Fruit Company in 1899. He'd merged with the Boston Fruit Company to create this United Fruit, which eventually became the biggest employer in Central America. The term Banana Republic was coined in 1904 by the writer O. Henry to describe the enmeshment of United Fruit in the governments of Central America. You know, they controlled everything. They controlled the postal service. They controlled the telegraph lines. Everything was all going through United Fruit. And as you can imagine, a huge and powerful company having almost total control over a region plagued by corruption, dictatorship and lawlessness was not a recipe for fair and equitable working conditions, as well as brutal crackdowns on industrial action, including a notorious incident in 1928 when Colombian troops machine gunned striking United Fruit workers. United Fruit was also a key lobbyist in persuading the US to covertly bring about the 1954 Guatemalan coup, which deposed a democratically elected government who planned to redistribute land in a way that would not have favoured United Fruit, and replace them with a US-backed puppet. That was all Bananas. Bananas were at the bottom of all of this.
Well, Bananas were at the bottom of many things, if you believe certain historians, because some, well, theologians at least, believe that the forbidden fruit consumed by Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden was not actually an apple.
Again, not a fig, not a pomegranate. That's just because of the shape, isn't it? It is just because of the shape.
A banana, it's partly because of the shape.
What could they be hinting at there? The forbidden
fruit. It's the most sinfully shaped fruit.
It is, yeah.
Well, according to Carl Linnaeus, an 18th century Swedish botanist, who was the first person to successfully grow a full-flowered banana tree in the Netherlands, of all things, he theorized that bananas grow at the right height for someone to longingly reach out and grab, also backing up his very thin argument, it has to be said. Banana leaves are larger than fig leaves, which might work better to cover nakedness. And so he put all of this together and took his penchant for bananas further by speculating other uses for bananas. For example, he recommended boiling bananas with sugar to cure anger, mashing bananas with honey to soothe eye inflammation, and crushing banana root soaked in milk to alleviate dizziness. This is probably also all connected to the fact that he had grown these banana trees and didn't know what to do with them.
He was so close, wasn't he? He nearly came up with a banana split, but he didn't make it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He was so close to greatness.
Tomorrow.
Oh, God. Positions. Positions, everybody. Start the rides. Do the thing. Fire up the stoves.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.